Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Ooh, I like this. I like this one. This is you? I like this one. This is different. Some of your other ones have like a, like, again, I don't know, the like music, like definitely like Eastern part of the world type of theme to them. Mm. This is more normal. I like it.
Yeah,
I like this one. Expected to hear from Andy Reid in a couple minutes. Chiefs head coach going to speak to the media. And actually, he is ready right now on 96.5 The Fan.
All right. So good week of practice up to this point. They've got one more tomorrow. And these are phase three practices. Next week we'll start our official mandatory OTAs. Got a couple, 3 days of those, so we'll go from there. But it's been a good turnout. Guys are working hard. Appreciate the improvement that they're making, and especially the young guys pushing through these things. So it's a good lead up for them as they get ready for camp coming up here. So with that, time's your
Chargers day today?
Raider day. Yeah, Chargers yesterday.
With regard to Kingsley Suamotiyu, what tells you he's going to be a more productive player in his new spot than maybe he was as a rookie?
Yeah, first of all, he's got experience, and then he looks more comfortable there. He seems to be picking it up pretty well. Not that we're going full speed contact, but he has an opportunity to go against Chris, and that'll surely help him for the season.
Kind of like Gardner that you bring into the program. What type of veteran leadership? Because Patrick's pretty much veteran now. Like, what type of does he provide to the team?
Yeah, well, he's been there. He's started, so he's got that. He's got the confidence of the guys around him. Patrick knows he's been in there and done it, and so they can bounce things off of each other. It's always good to have peers that have played, and you can talk to them about it a little bit. Now, I think on game day, he'll be great with Patrick. Just what he's seeing from the sideline, you know, and what Pat's seeing when he's in there.
It seemed this portion was well attended by even the veterans. I guess just how impressed were you with just considering it voluntary, the attendance of the 10 days or 9 days?
Yeah. Really, everybody, for the most part, has been here. So at some point, and some guys have business things they've got to run out and do. but for the most part, guys have been here and participate, which I've been impressed with. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And the continued theme, I know we asked a lot about Josh Simmons, just how is he progressing and continuing?
Yeah, you know what? He's doing a nice job. We weren't sure quite how much we were going to be able to get out of him, but he looks strong. He's been jumping in and taking the team reps now with what he was just doing, the individual stuff before. and you can definitely see the talent. He's got to keep learning the stuff that Andy's teaching him, and fundamentally, technique-wise. So, but he sure has a good attitude about it.
Andy Burchard-Smith, what have you learned about him just since you've gotten him?
Yeah, I like what he does. He's got good speed and a good route runner, that part of his game. For running backs and linebackers, these are kind of tough camps. So we'll just see how things go once we get to camp. But what we've asked him to do, he's done a good job.
And with Kingsley, just going back to last year, did he handle all that how you hoped he would, what he went through last season?
Yeah, it looked like he learned as he went. It was rough, obviously, early. And expectations are high. You come into a championship caliber team and throw in their left tackle, and it's not always the easiest thing for a young guy. So, but I think it was a great experience and I think that'll tell itself out as he goes forward.
Generally speaking, with your young guys, as you work through these phases, are you more interested in what you see on the practice field, in the meeting room, or just around the building? What are the things you really look for?
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, you probably evaluate all that. You got a kind of an eagle eye on, and making sure they're handling themselves the right way, and still giving them a little room to grow in there on their own. But you definitely keep a close eye on them.
With Josh, I know with your guys you've had, if anyone's hurt, you kind of know how to make them not do too much. When you have someone who's new to you, you're a little bit surprised that he's doing this much stuff. Have you guys had to say, take a little bit slow?
Yeah, we've done that with him, and he's asked for more, and we've kind of kept backing him up here and easing him into it. So, but you can tell that he rehabbed, did a nice job with it. Obviously, the people that did the surgery did a nice job with it. So he looks like and he's in good shape. He's here quite a bit. He's one of those guys that you got to kind of kick out of the building. So
we know that regarding Trey Smith, Brett has been in talks and trying to work at something out. Is your expectation that he will be participating next week?
We'll see. I don't know that, to be honest. I mean, these things are. We'll see where it goes.
Speaking of the eagle eye, when it comes to, I saw today you were focusing on the receivers a little bit more, and then sometimes we'll go to like running backs. When you're going to these different units, what are you looking out for, just keeping your quote unquote, as you to use your words, eagle eye on these specific units?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I can give the guys something, just from experience, I try to do that. If you just go on. These guys are great. I mean, they're the best in the world at what they're doing. If you can give them a little nugget, the great players that I've been around, they want that. And so if I see something, I'll share it with them. Their coaches do a great job with it, but listen, if I see something, I'm going to try to tell them.
Andy, I know some of the position coaches last week talked about doing an offensive audit after the Super Bowl. How important is it for you guys to stay innovative and to keep from being predictable so teams can't get a beat on something?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think every coach would probably tell you that, but I think it's important that you keep growing. And there's some lessons you can learn out of that. I told you before, I thought the attitude that they had coming out of that, I'd look for that. Are you going to take responsibility? These guys took responsibility for it. That gives you an opportunity to improve, coaches and players. If you come in and you start pointing the finger at each other, you can't grow, you know. And so, but these guys have done that, and they've had a great attitude this offseason.
We'll do last three. Go ahead, Matt. Coach Spags was on Travis's podcast this week and told a story about you guys' first meeting when he went down to visit a friend on the staff down at UTEP. What do you remember about that, and how did that friendship grow from there?
Yeah, he was real close with that staff, and I was kind of the new kid on that staff. They had already been there a year by the time I got there, but everybody respected him. We all knew. They all knew he was a good coach. Some of the guys, like I said, had worked with him. So, you know, I just over the years I got to know him because of that. And that same staff went to Missouri. So Spags was always around, visiting, coming down to learn stuff, and then to see his friends at the same time.
John, on the Missouri side, Andy Hill. Can you just talk a little bit about
you
guys?
Yeah, so Andy retired to golf and fish, so and hunt.
Summer savings. You're listening to Andy Reid here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, I guess we lost Andy there. All right.
And he's got a great relationship with Tobe and the other coaches, but he's very close with Dave. We'll miss him. Porter's moved over to that, and who's a good young football coach. So he'll do a nice job. But, you know, again, it was nice to have Andy here for the years he was here. Very well liked.
Last one, go ahead.
Coach, we've seen rookies in years past in the offensive skill group maybe take a little bit of time to get implemented in this complicated system, but exceptions of Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice in the past couple seasons. What do you see in Jalen Royals? Do you see that sort of potential for him to get involved in his rookie year?
Yeah, he looks like he's a sharp kid. He works hard. He's strong, a little bit like Rashee that way. Probably more like Rashee than one. So it's he's got a little bit more beef to him, thick lower body. But again, strong, and he's picked stuff up. He doesn't say a whole lot. Very, very quiet. But he picks things up and does a nice job with it.
All right, that was Andy Reid. How about Mac Morey? Look at Mac Morey asking questions at the press conference there. Mac was out at OTAs. You can check
out. He's out there to learn about thick lower bodies.
Check out his Twitter account. Give him a follow if you guys have not already. At Mac J Morey 25. He's put out some video the last couple times out there at minicamp. I guess technically not OTAs, right? Minicamp and then OTA, mandatory OTA start next week.
They do. And that's why he was asked about Trey Smith and whether or not he'd be in attendance. Mm-hmm, he's like, I don't know. We'll see. I'll be honest. I doubt Andy is all that concerned about it. He'd rather have him there than not. But he also understands the business side of the sport, and he's had different people hold out before. It's not like this is a new thing that have come out of this before. So if for some reason he's not there next week, I wouldn't worry about it. Two most encouraging things, once again, are about the offensive line.
Yeah.
It's Simmons is actually taking reps already.
With the team, not just individual
with
stuff.
With the team on June 12th. That is a really good sign, in my opinion. A month and a half before training camp opens up, he's already taking team snaps. That's a really good thing. And the other stuff is that Kingsley just looks more comfortable. He's like, he looks more comfortable there. You want to know the truth? Looks more like he knows what he's doing there. You can hear it already in Andy. So we need some of that, obviously, in that left side of the line. If Simmons is healthy, I give him at least a 50-50 shot of winning the job.
Yeah, it's all about health. It's all about that. And whether or not on day one of training camp in St. Joe, is he available to do what everybody else is doing, or is he held back? And that is going to tell us everything, I believe. I'm still skeptical if he can do that. If he's available on day one and doing everything like Jalen Moore is going to do everything, then yeah, we got a real competition and he's got a great chance.
It should be day one competition and may the best man win. You've had too much bad left tackle play for so long to not do that.
Someone says Mac Daddy sounded very official asking that question. It was very much so. Yeah.
I think this is what I like about the talk side versus when I've covered a team is I don't like being the toned down version of myself. When I've covered stuff like that, you got to be like, Mr. Reed, what do you think about the impending move to... I don't want to sound like that. I want to sound like a regular person.
A little more beef to him, a thick lower body.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andy.
Who was he talking about for that?
I think Jalen Royals.
Jalen Royals.
Oh. You know he's got a thick lower body. Did you guys see the video of Debo Samuel?
Please tell me.
Did you guys see the video of Debo Samuel running a practice rep yesterday?
He looks.
I gotta be honest, guys. He's looking a little thick.
Yeah, he's not quite Eddie Lacy though. Let's not go overboard
That's
here.
That's what Charge called him.
Yeah, Charge, our fantasy football guy.
Someone called him Kelvin Benjamin, and then started with the lines of like he's one Popeye biscuit away from a.
He's
meal
always
or whatever it was.
I'll be curious what he looks like at training camp. So Debo Samuel's the last because he also plays a lot of running back, so he's a little thicker. But I wonder if this is even more so than what he was in the past. He's now, of course, a commander.
I gotta say, if I were your buddy Grant, who does stuff in DC,
yeah, I'll ask him this weekend. I'll text him right now.
Today, you know, would have almost been, are we sure about that?
I'll find out. I'll see if he answers me. He's on the air. He's on the air because the East Coast, they're already on the air for.
Or if he just thinks, it's probably fine.
I just said
they're not even worried about it. You know, did you see the video I sent you?
Yeah,
he's looking a little big, right?
All I said was, "Is Debo fat?" And I just texted him.
I don't know if he's fat as much as it looks like he definitely has put on a few pounds. He looks fuller in the face. Like he looks. You know, when you can tell somebody's been putting on some weight,
maybe he's going to line up at running back a little bit more than we realize. You know, he's
got
to be able to handle the tackles. You know, in order to I'll stop.
I'm going back at. Let me watch this video again one more time. I mean, I don't know, man. I knew he was always kind of a bigger player. Are the Niners' colors more slimming
than the maroon of the Commanders?
He's only in shells, and he's looking pretty big, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Andy Reid. I think Kingsley's supposed to talk later. Likely we'll air some of that tomorrow or play clips from that tomorrow because I'm curious if he also feels like he's more comfortable there. Obviously the left side of the line is the biggest story coming into any part of the offseason this year and will remain it other than can you stay healthy and what's the offense look like once you're in there. But yeah, I'm more than curious kind of how that battle rolls out. And again, I don't think they paid Jalen Moore so much money that you can't let Simmons win the job. You spent a first-round pick on him. You can certainly let him win the job if he's healthy. And when they originally drafted him, I just assumed he wouldn't be ready for week one.
Correct. And
if he's doing teamwork now, it's at least plausible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good sign. We'll note, like, right now when they're just showing the media portion of, you know, limited practice and this is all we have, they're not in pads, it's very easy to time will, like, there's no hiding it once we get to training camp. Is he out there working with the ones? Is he out there working with even the twos? But is he available? Like, there will be no hiding that versus right now. I still think you really don't know how far along they truly are.
No.
Somebody asked the question, I think it was the last time we talked about this. It could have been a couple weeks ago, but I remember, is it possible if Simmons is ready at tackle, would they ever consider, since they pay Jalen Moore, having him slide into left guard? Is that ever a consideration? Would that, I think
Jalen Moore never played guard.
That's not where he's played.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know.
I think they would just prefer.
I mean, in fairness, Kingsley was more of a tackle
based
in college
on
too.
Based on their history, they would just like the flexibility at tackle. I've told you that if Simmons is real and he wins a job at left tackle, then you should put Moore and Juwan Taylor in a true battle for right. Let them, like, if Simmons wins it in 2 weeks, let them battle that for right. I know it's a monetary thing for you, and that's not wrong for thinking that. I think it's sunk cost, and you're paying him one way or the other.
Teams don't operate that way, usually. $27 million cap hit. Teams usually don't put that guy on the bench.
I just want the best guy playing.
I hear you.
And look, I think you've admitted what's probably more true about that. If that were to ever happen to be middle of the season and Juwan Taylor can't get out of his own way.
After a month or so.
Moore comes in and he loses the job more than out of camp. I'm just saying you should absolutely leave yourself open in that regard because that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, it would have to be terrible play for a month. That's when a change would happen. We're heading into week one. I don't see a scenario where Juwan Taylor, if he's healthy, is not playing right tackle for the Chiefs week one.
It is the, by all account, it is the least likely scenario. I'm not trying to pretend like it's not. It definitely is, but I don't know, man. The camp stories will be Smith, probably, right, at running back. I saw Kareem Hunt say that he's a pretty versatile player because people want to find out if he can be the next Isaiah Pacheco and kind of immediately matter for the team. The left side of the line. And then the rest of it is
going to
be
camp darlings, and the rest will be camp darling highlights that look great. But even if the guy makes the team, he's sixth on the depth chart, and we overreact to it. Or I shouldn't say we; some overreact to it.
I'll say we are as a news entity. We're not news, but as an entertainment entity, I get it. We fan the flames of guys like Jack Caglione. We drive some of the hype around a player, sometimes unnecessarily, admittedly. But I blame writers. I blame writers specifically for hyping up players none of us have ever heard of or even care about, okay? I saw a link for an article today that said, learn more about Kevin Fulsh.
Who the hell is that?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's why you got to learn more.
For the Chiefs or Royals. True, didn't even know. He's a Chiefs player.
Okay. Kevin who?
I don't want to learn more about Kevin Fulsh.
F-O-L-S. S-H or S-C-H?
F-O-E-L-S-C-H. C-H. Fulsh.
Mm. Oh, he's got the, okay.
Wait, do I need to know more?
He's got the what?
Like, what do you call that, the above the O's in grammar?
Umlauts?
I think that's right.
He's got the umlauts?
Oh, so.
Is he German?
Is that him or is that just a different? No, that's.
Man, I don't know.
I don't know if he.
I don't know Kevin Fulsh.
Oh, that's a soccer player, but it's spelled the same way, but his has the, those.
Okay.
Eagles signed tight end Kevin Fulsh 9 months ago.
Oh, now, former Eagle. 24-year-old out of the University of New Haven. I don't care to ever learn any. And Kevin, I'm sorry if you're listening, man. This is nothing.
Yeah, you shouldn't have mentioned Jack's name.
This has nothing to do with you.
You shouldn't have mentioned Jack Caglione's name because now people in the text center are confused saying that you're saying you're tempering expectations. No, Jack Caglione.
I don't remember tempering any expectations for Jack Caglione.
Warranted hype for him. He's done it. We're talking about the. You guys know the names, the Justin Rosses, et cetera, of the world, that at training camp Tyquan Thornton, the player that makes a great catch that gets put out on social media after day three of camp, and we try to act like he's the next future star wide receiver. And
because you got to write every day. Sometimes you got to write about guys like Kevin Fulsh and his journey to the league. Ugh.
It makes fans more familiar. You know, I can appreciate it. You have to be realistic,
I don't mind
though.
Telling the story of the player. I just think... We see somebody that maybe if all goes well makes the roster, and we try to oh my gosh, he's going to be such a weapon, he's going to be on the field for 2% of the snaps all year. I mean, that's all I'm
make
saying
make a tackle on a punt return and we'll be like, oh yeah, that guy I could have learned more about by clicking that link.
That's right.
I'm going to click on the link now. I want to know more. I'm going to become an expert on Kevin Fulsh.
If they got more than two paragraphs, kudos to the writer. That's incredible work. You got two paragraphs on him on June 12th. I'm actually kind of blown away on the level of research.
Yeah, the Royals, or the Royals, the Chiefs cut somebody yesterday that I didn't even know was on the roster. So
what's his name?
He's like one of the extra minicamp bodies.
I thought he was going to make it, man.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I really did. I thought that was
the
guy.
You know who it was.
Oh, man, I didn't know they cut somebody. Well, I mean, come on. This time of year, there's a lot of players that aren't going to make it. You know, they're just around. Are you learning more about him?
No. I was looking for the guy they cut yesterday.
Oh, you're still trying to find it?
Yeah. Here we go. You know they signed him because they cut somebody named Siaki Ika. And they signed Kevin Fulsch.
Oh, okay.
S-I-A-K-I-I-K-A.
I got to be honest. They got like six paragraphs on this guy.
Probably it's a great story.
But half of it is including the fact that they cut that guy that you just mentioned. So it's not, you know.
He's wearing number 46 if you're out there.
I'm trying to support this guy the rest of his career. I hope he has a great career.
Division two, New Haven Chargers. Drew, that's all you, buddy. That's all you.
Yeah, New Haven, that feels like a school you're familiar with. Mm-hmm.
The Northeast 10 Conference, man. You know the Northeast 10 Conference. They got some stuff.
Powerhouse?
They got some stuff.
Is that like the SEC of Division II?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's D2. It might be FCS. If it's the Northeast.
No, they need him. In all seriousness, they signed him because a lot of the... Travis Kelce's not there. And you have... Wiley's still hurt, and so you got a bunch of guys.
I don't think New Haven is in the top 10 of D2 programs heading into this college football season, so no.
Oh, you only look at the top tier.
Elitist.
Well, I covered D2 for a little bit, and they happen to be in that upper tier. So there was
said, is the rugby guy still on the Chiefs roster? No, he's in Jacksonville.
Is he still there, though? LRZ. Do we know?
I assume he's in camp with them, or OTAs, or whatever. We're at mini camp.
Well, pretty soon, the signed helmet in our office is going to end up being like displayed in my house. I'm just going to display the one autographed helmet in my entire house. Is going to be the one signed by Luis Rees-Zammit.
Let's see.
I'll have to explain it every time someone comes over, Drew. It's great.
Yeah. This man never actually played it down for the Chiefs, but hey.
We got to get one more score update from Drew.
He signed to the active roster in February.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Which guy?
Rees-Zammit.
Hey, how about that?
He's on the 53?
And then he was moved from the active roster to the exempt international list, meaning he cannot be signed by another club while he's on the practice squad.
Oh, they want to keep him.
Put him back on the international player.
Yeah.
Hope he takes one snap.
Remember when he went on a date? He went on a date at Worlds of Fun.
I do remember that. With a supermodel.
Yeah.
A Victoria's Secret supermodel. Yes, he took to Worlds of Fun.
Yes, he did.
They're ready to play him until they move to the UK, and then they'll get more fans to go out there to the games.
All right, up next, we'll get to what's trending, including Drew's U.S. Open leaderboard update and the latest on the stadium front, and we'll all try to get along next.
What's trending?
What's trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Number one, while the Royals trying to salvage something out of this New York Yankees series. A little after 6:40 tonight, the Royals will take on the Yankees. Vern's On Deck show starts at 5:30. Will Warren gets the nod for the New York Yankees. The Royals need some offense immediately. And how about falling behind in the first or second inning? It's been an embarrassing series against the Yankees at this point. Complete domination. You can say, well, what did you expect? They're a better team. Not to lose but in six runs. Good news, Seth Lugo is on the mound tonight, so hopefully that helps them out a little bit too.
I was hopeful somehow they were going to like just have the comeback of a lifetime last night. 6-3.
Yeah.
Had some chances.
Cags somehow has a four-game hitting streak, though.
He does. One hit pretty much per game, but he's still got the four-game hitting streak. It's more hard still, which matters. Next up on What's Trending, the Pacers get Game 3 against the Thunder last night. 116-107 in Indiana to take a decided Game 3. The Game 3 winners, Golden and I were talking about before the show, 80% of the time goes on to win the NBA Finals. Now, the betting markets still say the Thunder are the favorites, but 8 out of the last 10 times, pretty much, the Game 3 winner wins the series, so we'll see exactly what comes of it. Tyrese Halliburton has not taken a single free throw in the entire series so far, and they're still up 2-1, which is a pretty good sign for the Pacers.
Stanley Cup Final continues this evening. Florida and Edmonton.
For cash out.
Been keeping an eye on this because of cash out, bro. But the Panthers are up 2-1. This one gets going, 7 o'clock tonight, I think it is. Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final.
He still has $60,000 on the table he could take today?
Right this second.
Oh, my God. Take it, dude. Take it. Yeah. Take the money.
We can talk more about
down
him
in both series. Take,
I know he's down 2-1.
What are you
money.
Doing? There's still $16,000 for your $13 bet.
And he clearly is not going to take it. He turned down 123. He's not going to take 60. He's either going to win 270 and have both teams come back in their series, or he's going to get nothing. And yes, he got a couple free trips and some media attention, but that nobody's going to care, and nobody's going to remember who you are in about 3 days. So.
Next up on What's Trending, the Bengals first-round pick Shamar Stewart has officially left minicamp today with his continued contract issues with Cincinnati still a problem. He had said he didn't want to be a distraction. Final day of minicamps, at least today. But he was at least at the facility and not practicing. He has now left the facility and not attending. It all comes back to some language in the contract they wanted to add that would allow them some voiding of guarantees down the road if he wasn't working out as a potential draft pick. To be clear, those don't exist in any of their current contracts or players like that in first-round picks, or for any player who is picked at that level in the NFL. So Cincinnati's kind of trying to like pull one over on this one. Shamar Stewart's not falling for it, is my opinion of the matter, and I think most people's public opinion of the matter. They got to figure out some way to work this out. But he's done. He's not even showing up to minicamp anymore.
It's just an embarrassing mess.
Oh, it's the last day. PR-wise. That him leaving minicamp, it's the last day of minicamp. It doesn't. They're done
after
this anyways.
He's a rookie, though. He hasn't been able to get any of the same work as everybody else.
I know. I agree with the premise of it. But him leaving minicamp today is not a big deal. It's just the contract stuff. I mean, if he was there today, it wouldn't have mattered. Because it would still be the same problem.
But it's still causing a bigger scene for the team by not showing up in a way, right?
Like him standing there and not, it would be another picture for, hey, he's here and he's not talking to anybody and he's not stretching. He's on, it would have been, I don't think it would have mattered regardless, but you're right, Cody, in the fact that
it's got to do something nobody else does.
So I found out what they currently do is they default a year on the same, they would void a year on the same year that's guaranteed, where the Bengals are now potentially defaulting on any year in the contract, which is
different. They're going to be able to cut him whenever.
Yes, correct.
Tough. Yeah. I mean, he's a first-round pick. Why are you going to want to cut the guy already? You took him 17th overall.
If you felt the need to do this, then you shouldn't have drafted him. If that's the premise of what we need to bank on.
I think it's just trying to save a few bucks.
Saving our ass.
Lastly, on What's Trending, someone pointed this out to us earlier, but Jacob Mizorowski, you're like, who is that? Well, he is a starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's making his big league debut tonight for Milwaukee against St. Louis. He's from the local area, which is kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
He's from Green Valley, Missouri, and he's one of the top prospects in all of baseball. 6'7". 6'7". Yeah, anyways, he's making his debut. Congrats to him. Kind of a cool connection. The story to go with this, though, is so Aaron Civale.
He's skinny.
Yeah, he's a young kid still, I think. Yeah. Right? And he's still only 23. I don't know what his.
I guess the last 6'7" player I saw was Aaron Judge. So by comparison,
well, so
on the mound though, I mean,
so Jacob Mizorowski, he's 23. He took a starting spot in the rotation because he's their top prospect and he's their future. Aaron Civale is a veteran. He got kicked out of the rotation for him, and now he said, "I want to trade." So he's mad. He got kicked out of the rotation, so now he's requested a trade.
Okay. I mean, I can't blame him if he wants to be a starter. Royals could be in the starter market all of a sudden, as much as we talked about hitting, and I still think that that's what they have to target. But where was he is he
prospect,
a top 100
right?
prospect?
That's what I was pulling up as I speak.
I was trying to look it up here on MLB.com's MLB pipeline.
He was not in the top one. He was number 68. There you go. Top 50, but he's number 68.
Yeah, I see him. Yep. Okay. Good for him.
6'7", 197.
Goodness.
From Green Valley, Missouri.
Good for the Green Valley kid. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck in your debut tonight.
Let's get to a little U.S. Open leaderboard updates. Drew Nixon, take it away.
They continue to go really bad for Rory. Tell me that first.
The day continued to go very poorly for Rory at Oakmont, site of the U.S. Open. Rory ended his day at +4 for the tournament. If you're curious where that puts him, he's tied for 85th after he went 4 over par the last 4 holes, really went 4 over par in 3 holes to cap off his round. He is tied with the likes of Matt Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, Phil Mickelson also currently at 4 over, Tommy Fleetwood, Hideki Matsuyama, a number of players there. Gary Woodland Gary Woodland ended up at +3 gold for your KU guy. Colin Morikawa's through 4 holes is -1. He's tied
perfect.
For 7th. So
perfect.
Again, I don't want to burst your bubble though, because Gary Woodland also started at 1 or 2 under. And he ended up at +3. So
I have
things
actual,
can change quickly.
I have actual money on Colin though, top 5 or win.
Clubhouse leader is JJ Spawn. He fired a 66. He is in the clubhouse. Tristan Lawrence, the South African, is at -3, solo second. And Siwoo Kim also at -2. He is done for the day. Other names, Brooks Koepka, -2 for the tournament. After a really bad PGA, he's seemingly bouncing back from
you
that.
You told me not to bet on him. It's going to be your fault if he ends up winning. You told me don't bet on Koepka.
Yeah, he can still have a blow-up hole. Again, it does seem like the rounds are changing quick.
The way that it seems to... I mean, if you... You could play conservatively, and I think play very well. You're not going to win, but if you were to be like, you know what, I'm taking a 3 iron off of every tee, and I'm making sure I hit fairways, you'd probably end up placing in the top 30, just off of being in the fairways alone and taking yourself out of trouble. Because all it takes, like Rory, he was -1, had one really bad hole.
He was like in the rough for like four straight shots, man.
You know, he ended up bogeying that hole too, which is a miracle.
What?
It was a really good bogey.
I can't believe that wasn't like a quad.
Then it blew up on him down the stretch where if you get in the rough.
I'd have picked up the ball.
If you get in the rough at this golf course, it looks.
It's rough.
It's very, very rough. Pun intended.
That is
your US Open update.
That's the worst golf pun.
I know. Giving Drew a hard time because he gets annoyed when I do this. What would your score be right now if you were golfing out there, Drew?
Plus
through how many holes?
72.
Through how many holes?
For just today, 18.
18.
Through 18?
Plus 35.
I bet you I would probably shoot 100 and...
Okay, so.
115? So I would...
That's actually a somewhat realistic
That'd be my guess. For all I know, I might do worse. I could do...
123.
The worst guy in the course today shot a plus 14, so you're definitely worse than that guy.
Yep.
Oh, 100%. I
123.
I think I very much would be worse than.
So there's a 285 par three. Yeah, like 285 yards for a par three.
It is pretty egregious when the guys are taking D stick out and having to hit driver.
They were practice range. I saw that. Yeah.
They're having to hit driver at a par three. It's kind of egregious. As cool as it is to see the major players struggle at times, a near 300 yard par three is.
That's always a debate, right? With the U.S. Open, people are like, would you rather see the golfers just tearing up the course, or would you rather them be challenged?
I'd rather
U.S.
Open.
We're going to challenge,
and that's what the U.S. Open typically is. It's lower scores or higher scores. You know,
I'm actually in favor of that. One course should one tournament can be the tough one. Be the murderer's row one. That's fine.
In fairness, there is some BS to this tournament, though. It's harder on them, but we're talking about like 5 inches of rough, where it's particularly
a little bit. Come on, what are we
it's
doing?
It's particularly egregious. In order to make them struggle, the conditions have to be pretty ridiculous and obscene.
Take care of yourself.
As a casual golf fan, I don't want to go out there and watch them struggle. I want to see them make ridiculous shots.
I don't want to see it when they
don't
play in
22
those, like,
under.
Yeah,
I hear you.
That's my problem. It's like I'm not looking for that kind of tournament either. I don't mind that the one tournament is the gauntlet, the ultimate ninja warrior course, right? I don't care that one of them is like, this is a joke. Like, it's fine. If somebody wins at +1, I'm comfortable with that tournament.
The rough looks absolutely insane.
We'll have a better feel tomorrow. It's so early in the tournament. Not everybody's even golf yet.
There's some guys who went lower than I thought.
Who are just now
tomorrow,
starting.
I'll be fascinated tomorrow afternoon where the cut line is projected at
I bet you the cut line's like plus. I was talking to my brother yesterday about it. Probably +7, +6, +7.
Jeez.
Scotty, I think, is even. I
can't believe he's
I think Scotty's even through like four
He'll
holes.
He'll be in the mix somehow.
He's barely even started.
He played at the Masters. He played the most boring.
Scotty's +1 through four holes.
Not even impressive four rounds at the Masters, and I think he finished third. it was so nonchalant, wasn't even impressive at any point in the tournament. He was like third at the end of the Masters.
Yeah. He's ridiculous. Sam Burns is now also tied for second.
Honestly, Rory won't even care if he finishes poorly because he'll still just be
someone. I don't know how he had the third best odds. I was talking to you guys about that yesterday. It made absolutely no sense. He was +9 in the RBC Heritage last week.
He won a major this year. That's why
you see the photos circulating though from the U.S. Open. So on the course, obviously they have like the leaderboard or not a leaderboard. They have people holding up the score following the golfers, not the caddy, but there's a name for them. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Guy or gal.
Scorekeeper.
Holding the stick to let you know, identify the golfer and the score. Okay, so if you've won a U.S. Open, they have a U.S. Open trophy next to your name on the little placard. They have it for Rahm and for Dustin Johnson. They don't have one next to Spieth.
Dang.
That's just disrespectful. Yeah. What do we do?
Somebody
screwed up, but like, come on.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody just put a photo out there on. It's gone viral.
If you guys were to follow somebody Who would you follow? I feel like Scotty's obviously a popular answer, but if you were to follow somebody play, who would it be?
Colin or Rory. Probably Rory, honestly. Yeah, probably Rory.
Unless Tiger's in a tournament.
Yeah, probably, at this point,
even that, just so you could say you did it once.
At this point, probably Rory, honestly.
I think Jordan Spieth would be a fascinating follow.
Okay, I can see it.
Just because you don't know
Hovland.
Because with Jordan Spieth, you don't know what's going to happen.
You know what? DeChambeau would actually be an interesting one, too, though. Just because of his... Yeah.
I was thinking Tyrrell Hatton. If you want to have a laugh, Tyrrell Hatton might be a good one. Tyrrell Hatton actually is playing pretty well, surprisingly enough.
Minwoo Lee, because he's like 21. He just seems like kind of like a young bro on the course. Oof, why not? I don't know. There's a couple.
A young bro?
I mean, it's still tight. I mean, Tiger's still the draw for the sport until he's done forever. I'm not saying Scotty Scheffler. He's just like a
yeah, no, I
very
guess
plain.
If Scotty found a way to win this, and
he's
it was
so one, good, it's boring.
If Scotty won this tournament and it was like a 4 or 5 shot lead win, we've got to be having him in the same conversation as in terms of Tiger dominance, like level
does the
of
course,
him being.
Nah, we've done Drew. That before. You got to wait like another 2 years before I even.
I know, but I think in terms
I remember
of
this conversation
him,
with Spieth.
Does the course like these conditions that change the type of club you use or anything like that?
All these guys
for these? Well, obviously they're people.
All these guys have custom shafts.
Yeah, huh.
I would presume. That was a pretzel conversation, by the way. Yeah.
Look, Scheffler's whole thing about golf, Drew, is he is legitimately so good it's boring. He just hits the ball in the fairway and then hits his club to about 10 feet out, and then he makes his birdie putt one out of every 3 times, and then he goes about his day so ho-hum on the golf. He doesn't, you know, like, he's never, like, in the thickets hooking it around a tree like Rory or Phil or Tiger. Mm-hmm. He just puts it in the fairway, and then he hits his green in regulation, and then he 1 or 2 putts, and he either gets his par or his birdie, and then he goes home and wins the tournament. I'm not saying he's not an impressive golfer, but it is, like, so surgical.
When as crazy as it sounds, too, Rory McIlroy is, with how good, because in between Rory's majors, Spieth had a run, Brooks had a run, and now Scotty's having a run, Rory's turning into Phil Mickelson. His career is turning into Phil Mickelson.
That's not a bad
really good player, comp. But never
felt like they should have won more titles.
Yeah,
but
felt like they should have won more titles. Competition was always somehow better than them. Like if it wasn't for Scotty, it would be Rory.
But he did do he's got the Grand Slam.
Correct. Yeah.
What was the one Phil was short on?
U.S. Open. This is Phil's last chance, and he's not gonna. It's not gonna happen. No offense to Phil, but he's just past his pat.
Yeah, yeah, it needed to happen a long time ago. Yeah,
he shouldn't have won the last.
It was the one that Justin Rose won at Marion. That was a long time ago. I don't remember when that was. 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that.
Text line's just giving you a hard time, Drew.
I'm not going to start a 913. No, I'm not going to do that. I've already got a podcast, by the way. A new episode came out yesterday. 249 miles of college football.
What was it covering?
We talk about the House settlement. We talk about what it means for in more in depth what it means for KU. Kansas State, Missouri, in regards to how they disperse money, how they utilize it. And then ESPN's FPI, we talked about it a little bit on the show, but they also gave conference champion percentages for for all of them. K-State has a 20% chance per ESPN's FPI to win the title. KU, third best chances in the Big 12. According to ESPN's FPI, they have a better chance than Iowa State, than Baylor, than BYU, to win the Big 12.
What could go wrong?
Missouri was in the bottom half. Missouri had a 0.4% chance to win
the SEC. Last year was their year. That was their chance.
Same schedule, but obviously Pribula is the question mark.
Yeah. Okay. We'll check that out. So, Spotify, yes. Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you podcast. Make sure you check out his podcast as well. Someone says, yeah, they don't like your Phil comp. Disagree. Rory's got 3 wins this year. And as we pointed out, the Grand Slam. So the Rory to Phil comp, they don't like it.
If you go back to, but Tiger was, he was always in Tiger's shadow, where Rory's kind of fallen underneath Spieth's shadow and
probably more
Brooke's shadow.
Than anyone else,
and now, yeah, now especially Scotty's shadow, where it's like.
I don't think he's in Brooks' shadow. Didn't he have more titles than Brooks?
I think Brooks has as many as he does, or if not more. I think Brooks might have, how many majors does Rory have? 4?
5? I don't know.
I think Brooks has 4.
All right. I mean, if Brooks has more, then I'll entertain the conversation, but I don't know.
And that was over a shorter period of time. We're talking about Rory's whole career.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we're not, you know how this works. Rory went 10 years with that. One Brooks could do the same. Brooks has 5, and so does Rory. They have the same amount. So I don't know if I'd say under the shadow, but yeah, one behind Phil Mickelson for total number of titles in your defense. He had 6, 3 Masters, an Open, and 2 PGAs with no U.S. Open. Obviously, Rory's got 1 of each except for 2 in the PGA Championship. But they both got 5 between him and Brooks. But what's the age difference? I don't know. How old's Brooks Koepka?
He, I don't know, probably 3-4 years younger would be my guess. Because Rory's what, in his mid-30s now?
Brooks Koepka's 35, dude.
How old's Rory?
I mean, similar age, I'd guess. We've really gotten into a nerdy.
Yeah, 36. we were going to talk stadium, but it's all right. We got a little sidetracked.
36.
Talking some golf. We'll do
the same
stadium
age
stuff plenty of times.
The same age. It's not the U.S. Open.
I also
day,
think the expectations are also part of what hurts Rory a little bit. Like, he was supposed to be, he was like, this guy could challenge Tiger, yada, yada, yada. It just never materialized.
Yeah, but that's what they say about Spieth and everyone else. They always try to, like, make it about Tiger. No, the same was every quarterback that tried to make it about Mahomes. Yeah. It's just because you want someone to be that good. Even Scheffler, I think it's way premature for the conversations about the run the Tiger had versus Scheffler. Scheffler has what, 2-3 major titles?
I don't think it's
like,
about the,
can't,
it's not
better
about the majors as
gotta
much
be
as it is the,
oh, we're talking about great majors.
It's
has
not
to
about
be
the majors in terms of it is the ease at which he wins. I think that's the conversation. It's a similar run to how Tiger has been on, where this dude is seemingly heavy favored to win every single tournament he steps foot on. That's the conversation, I think, is as it pertains to Tiger. Because, I mean, Tiger's still the greatest golfer ever.
You could,
Scotty's not there, not in that conversation.
You could say he was that.
You got to relax, man.
He had a lot of Drew drops in there. A lot more than I
remember.
Oh,
there's some good ones. I just discovered a few.
There are some really good ones.
I forgot about
Andy
some
had a
of
good
these
one today, in fairness. I didn't have
he
any.
He did. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That what was the Binkley wearing off on me, you know?
Could you imagine if we did a trivia night, Gold, and a bunch of categories were just things on this show?
Oh, my
you goodness. Had, you had to name certain number of cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
What? You know, talk about Drew and his golf clubs or
yeah,
decorating.
Yeah, and Epsom salt.
All that stuff. Honestly, that golf conversation was responsible
was
for like
from
half of these.
You said it.
I understand that. I don't know why.
I don't remember why you were talking about.
I'm sorry. I'd last that maybe 5 minutes.
Hope you guys have a good rest of your Thursday.
Friday tomorrow. You
tomorrow
know
is a Friday. We're a few days away from Father's Day. Don't forget. So that means tomorrow, Daddy Day song makes its return.
Nice.
Daddy Day song tomorrow on the show. Jake Eisenberg as well. We'll talk some Royals baseball with him. Up next, The Drive with CDOT and Rob.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.